Connext, and the people who wanted it to go badly.
I left university and became an Olympian, but it wasn't always easy.
Britain's most decorated female Olympian, the rower Catherine Granger.
In those low times, I turned to words of reassurance and inspiration.
Who errs? Who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error, at least fails while daring greatly.
Sharing her favourite pieces of writing, from Theodore Roosevelt to Nora Ephron.
However many roads you travel, I hope that you choose not to be a lady.
With great pleasure, next Monday afternoon at 4 on BBC Radio 4.
Where now we continue with the second episode in a new series from the Malawian comedian Dalisa Chaponda, in which he explores the relationship between the UK and Africa, and this week looks at the people who didn't want it to work. Dalisa Chaponda, Citizen of Nowhere.
The UK and Africa have had a long and troubled relationship. It's had its ups and downs. We've tried everything else, so now we need to see a therapist. There's only one man qualified for this role. So, to heal centuries of misunderstanding in half an hour on a limited budget, welcome Malawi's unofficial goodwill ambassador, Dalisa Chaponda!
Thank you very much. Thank you and welcome to the show. I am Dalisa Chaponda, a Malawian comedian who was tricked into moving to England by the BNP. They put out a newsletter which said that immigrants are taking all the good jobs, all the good women, and I was like, wow, that's what I'm looking for. The BNP lied to me. You are listening to Citizen of Nowhere, the show which looks at the relationship between the UK and Africa, and I am the citizen of nowhere in the title. I'm an African who grew up all over the world and has been in the UK for 10 years. I know your ways. I can walk into a Wetherspoons unperturbed. I know what a chip butty is. I can queue with the best of them. I am part of both cultures, but I belong in neither. This makes me the perfect mediator to mend your relationship with Africa. Think of me as the Dr. Phil of the colonized and colonizers. Last week, we covered how Britain first met Africa. You brought the gifts of your language, your religion, and smallpox. In this week's session, we shall try to get to the bottom of our hate issues. We'll be talking about haters. That is a slang term which means people who hate. In the UK, there are several right-wing groups that hate foreigners.
Wait a second.
Disembodied posh British voice man from episode one. Why are you interrupting me?
I object.
I didn't even write you into this episode. Why are you speaking up?
Well, last episode, you went on and on about how the British Empire oppressed Africa, but you said you'd be more balanced in the next episode and criticise Africa too. So I've showed up to watch. Now it's more of the same. Ooh, evil Britain, full of right-wing groups who hate foreigners.
I was starting with British hate groups, and then later I will talk about African hate groups.
Yeah, a likely story.
Would you prefer it if I did it in the other order? Or Britain first?
Britain first? Who said anything about Britain first? Oh, I see. Oh, fine. Well, it's your show. Do what you want. If I was part of the show, I could offer constructive criticism.
You really want to be in the episode, don't you?
Didn't I do a good job in the last episode? I got a fan letter. He wasn't too keen on you.
Okay. Here, I had a plan to have a rapper voice talking about the haters, like in a hip-hop video. Can you do a rapper accent?
Of course, I'm a professional voiceover artist. There is too many haters in Britain, la. He is well bad. Bruh. In it. D'ya get me?
Wait.
D'ya get me?
You know what?
Jeez.
You know what? Please, just do it as yourself. And we'll do Africa first so you can stop giving me that look. Just introduce the next section.
Haters in Africa.
I remember I was dating a white girl when I was going to school in Swaziland. And an uncle told me, it will never work, she's white. There are too many cultural differences. This is often the argument that people use to criticize interracial relationships.
I'm not being racist, but with all the cultural differences, you'll have problems.
Now, of all the relationships I've had fall apart, and there have been many, I don't think it's ever been a case where the cause was cultural differences. Oh, I love you. You're sexy, intelligent, understanding. But wait a second. I prefer Afrofusion and you like acid jazz? Is that Jamiroquai? That's it. It's over. Put your knickers on and get out. I was outraged by my it will never work racist uncle, and I decided that she and I would be a beacon to prove his racist notions wrong. When she later wanted to break up, I was like, hey, wait, but we have to stay together to fight racism. Come on, who cares that I cheated on you? We must stay together to mend the rift between our people. What would Martin Luther King say? By the way, the haters in Africa are not solely focused on white outsiders. They hate all foreigners, white, Asian, black. In 2015, I was going to South Africa to perform in a stand-up comedy show at a casino. Right before I arrived, there was an upsurge of xenophobic attacks, fueled by Zulu King Goodwill Zwelithini, who is very inappropriately named as he showed no goodwill whatsoever. He made a speech in which he said foreigners should go back to their countries. As South Africa is the richest country in the region, there are lots of immigrants from the rest of Africa working there. Malawians, Zimbabweans, Somalis, Nigerians. Following Goodwill's speech, local South Africans in the townships and poor areas began looting and attacking foreigners. It was black on black violence. 8 people were killed in the violence. Now, I would never make fun of that. However, one funny thing did happen. Boko Haram, the Nigerian terrorist group, heard that Nigerians were being killed in South Africa and sent a video. In the video, Boko Haram said, "Stop killing innocent people! They're a terrorist group! What's the issue? Don't kill, it's our job! You're interfering with our IP!" Boko Haram saying, "Don't kill innocent people," is like if you got a call from Bill Cosby saying, "Treat women better." I love how terrorists in the millennium are all about the videos. They have YouTube channels and their production is getting better and better. Eventually, they're gonna end up having a BAFTA category. Best terrorist video. It would at least be a great way to get a few more brown people nominated.
All awards should be about merit first. Not political correctness. The best person should win no matter what their race.
94% of all BAFTA Film Award nominees have been white.
Sounds about right to me. 87% of the UK is white. Are you nominating a lot of white performers in Nollywood? The big problem with political correctness is it ignores reality. I mean, take this show. Oh, it looks great to the lefties that it's an African immigrant host. But wouldn't it be better to have the funniest person?
Hey! I am the funniest person!
Really? Was anybody white even given the chance? I mean, being a white actor nowadays is a nightmare. You can't even play Othello. According to Mr. Webster in Harlow, my fan, an otherwise dreary evening of PC platitudes was saved by my humorous and insightful interjections.
I was talking about my casino gig in South Africa. All the comedians had bodyguards because some of the British comedians were afraid of the violence they'd heard about in the newspapers. We had white bodyguards, and I remember overhearing one of the bodyguards telling his friend,
"This country was so much better before the blacks took over and ruined it."
That night, I did a joke about how I didn't feel safe and was sure that if there was an attack, the bodyguard would use me as a body shield to protect the white comedians. After the show, he and I were called into an office of the casino owners, and I was sure he was going to get a bollocking. Instead, I got yelled at for making the casino look bad. And I was asked to apologize to the bodyguard. It was outrageous.
Did you storm out?
No, I apologized. I didn't want to lose the job.
I noticed that even though you were talking about black-on-black violence, you quickly segued to horrible white people.
Yes, I did. And yes, maybe I do blame the white man too much. I admit it. Black people can be paranoid about racism. I went dancing with a black friend of mine, Kyle, and he asked a white girl to dance. She said, no, thank you. And he came up to me and said, did you see that racist shit? I said, maybe she's just not into you. He asked another girl to dance. She said, no, thank you. Now he was really angry. Did you see that racist shit? I said, she's black, dude. He said, yeah, reverse racism. It's easy to be paranoid about racism because it's ever-present. If you're on a bus and someone moves to another seat, it could be because you're black, or maybe they want to look at the view. You never know. It's just that after you've been burnt, you expect it. It's like in a relationship. After you've been cheated on in your next relationship, you suddenly become Sherlock Holmes, looking for clues to prove your new girlfriend is as duplicitous as your ex. Why doesn't she answer when the phone rings? Maybe she's cheating. Why does she have a second phone she never lets me look at? Maybe she's cheating. Why is she pregnant with another man's baby? I really wish the last one was a joke. The difficulty in dealing with African haters, though, is a lot of what they say is true.
Here we go.
Hang on, I've not finished my point yet. There were centuries of oppression. Also, it's difficult not to notice that even though the British and other colonial powers left, they still own farms, mines, and made very dodgy deals on their way out. Take my homeland of Malawi. We signed a deal with the British in 1955 saying that UK companies can send revenue back to England untaxed. And it's not just them. A 2016 report revealed 101 companies listed on the London Stock Exchange have mining operations in Africa, and combined, they control resources worth $1 trillion. Trillion! The British left Africa, but they still own so much. It's like if you had a divorce and your wife still owns most of your stuff.
That's a terrible example. I'm divorced, and my wife does own all my stuff. Why do you think I'm in this bathrobe right now?
I thought that was a fashion choice. Careful, I think it slipped open. Anyway, here's what's ingenious. All you ever read about is how Africa is saved by the wonderful aid. 134 billion flows into the continent each year in the form of loans, foreign investment, and aid. But at the same time, 192 billion is extracted from Africa by foreign companies that don't pay taxes. That's like putting 50p in a homeless man's cup, but then taking the cup and his dog with you. So yes, it's easy to blame the white man. And it's true, a lot of the current problems are because of the colonial legacy. But it's not necessarily useful. Blaming someone else is a very easy way to ignore your own role. All African dictators learn one magic trick in their first year in power. Oh, why is the country starving? Ish, it's the evil white man. Even I have learned this magic trick. If this radio series flops, it was clearly the fault of my white sidekick.
Sidekick? Want to hear the rest of my fan letter?
Don't bother. Evil white men in the audience, though, don't feel off the hook. You still bear some of the blame, just not all of it. And to respond to the blame the foreigners groups in Africa, I guess we have to try to come up with more complex and nuanced answers. But if it's not the white man, then what?
Global warming, Facebook, Snapchat, or whatever it is, obesity, plastic bottles, cycle lanes, the Russians.
A lot of the problems exist because of the shoddy way that the new African leaders ran their countries just after kicking out the colonial powers. It always started so full of promise. You know what must be a tough day? The day after the revolution. It's like the day after getting married. When you look at the vows and say, wait, forsaking all others, till death do us part, what did I agree to? Just imagine you've had decades of revolutionary struggle, guerrilla warfare, imprisoned activists, strikes, and then you win. And then what? We did it! We did it! Finally, the shackles of oppression have fallen!
Our first order of business shall be no child shall go hungry. Land for all.
What was that you promised them? No child shall go hungry. Eish, not one. And land, for all. I don't think there's enough land, eh? Who came up with these promises?
You did, sir.
Land for all, equal pay, fair election, reparation paid by the British. I don't know how to make these things happen. You know what? Could you just build a very big statue of me? I'm sure it wasn't exactly like that, but you get my point. So much promised, and then these revolutionaries, who may have been brave and inspirational, had to try and make things happen. The thing is, though, the kind of person needed to engage in guerrilla warfare is not necessarily the best bureaucrat. Those are very disparate character types. Could you imagine William Wallace trying to restructure the NHS?
And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never privatise our NHS?
Revolutionaries do not make the best bureaucrats. Add to that rampant corruption. When I was in high school, one of my friend's parents worked for the Lesotho government, and he was not even ashamed he was corrupt. He'd boast. Once we visited him, and he had a new BMW. He said, "You see this car? Sweden." I said, "BMW, I think that's a German car." He said, no, you don't understand, eh? I buy this car with the money from Sweden." I said, "Wasn't the money Sweden gave Lesotho meant to be used to help the country?" How? When I was a small boy, big school, one school book. The teacher, she read the book, she tell us what it's like. So now, 200 school, I buy 200 school book, I give them one. With the change, I buy this car. I said, "But there are other things the money could be spent on. Wells for villagers, better sanitation." He said, "Ish, you are a small boy, eh? Everybody in Lesotho, they dream to have BMW, but we cannot give them all. So I buy it, I drive it. I tell them what it's like."
My wife's got the BMW now. Well, I miss that car.
Corruption and bad governance are just a piece of it. There's also lack of education and self-loathing. One of the worst legacies of the colonial period is it convinced Africans that they were lesser. It takes a long time to unlearn that. My mother is a doctor, and when she was working in Malawi at Queen Elizabeth Hospital...
Very well named.
One year, a white Swedish doctor started working there, and all the Malawian black patients would queue outside the Swedish doctor's door and not want to see my mother. Ironically, the Swedish doctor was unfamiliar with tropical diseases and would often have to ask my mother for a consult. The idea that any black person could be as capable as a white person is beyond a lot of Africans. "There is no way we can help ourselves," is another common sentiment. "We need the white people and the white charities to come and save us."
So wait, you blame us for everything, but also ask us to save you.
It is a mess. It's a complex mess. And unfortunately, nuance and complexity is not as catchy as "blame the white man." Similarly, in England, with "blame the immigrants," it's much more catchy than saying that...
Back on England now.
Hey, I spent 10 minutes on African ignorance.
I'll give you that, okay.
Okay, let's move on to the next section.
Haters in England.
England has its own host of members who hate foreigners. Take Jo Marnie, the girlfriend of former UKIP leader Henry Bolton, who responded to the news that Meghan Markle, who is mixed race, will join the royal family with an angry text. "This is Britain, not Africa." This makes no sense on a number of levels. First of all, Meghan is American, not African. So what's Africa got to do with it? Also, I didn't realize if you want to marry someone with any black heritage, you have to do it in Africa and live in Africa. Jo Marnie then got more and more angry and started spouting all kinds of conspiracy theories. She texts, "They are working their way up. Next thing you know, we're going to end up with a Muslim PM or a black king." Now, as a minority, I've got to say that this is oddly inspirational. She believes in our capabilities more than we do. But I will also admit that not everything the British haters say is nonsense. I have a sympathy for racists. Not young racists, old ones, the ones who grew up in a different time. I know the last thing they want to see is me when they walk into a dark alley. And I understand it's a rational fear. Similarly, the last thing I want to see is them when I walk into a job interview. And yes, there are some immigrant criminals. Can we deal with that reality without oddly expanding it to, they're all thieves and killers? Also, we don't all want to sleep with your women. I mean, I do. I definitely do. But don't sidle the other immigrants with my lechery. Also, too many immigrants often quickly becomes a flurry of racial abuse. I've been called all sorts of racial insults over the years, and it's amazing how unoriginal they are. Nigger comes from negre, which means black. Darky for dark skin. They just describe what they see. I saw this simplicity in action a few years ago when I was walking around Liverpool with a white female. Someone started angrily shouting, "Penguin! Penguin! Penguin!" I guess this was meant to be a racist slur because one of us was black and the other was white. But penguins are cute. If anything, they were cheering us on. And so unoriginal. He could have gone with so many other things that are black and white. How about pandas? Very old televisions. Newspapers. That song by Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson himself. In England, my first experience of haters was the British National Party. Early on in my time in England, they left a newsletter in my mailbox. Actually, their dropping off the flyer was odd. I say odd because I was living in Moss Side, one of the poorer areas of Manchester, primarily populated by immigrants. How much uptake did they get? It would be like Jehovah's Witnesses going from tent to tent in Glastonbury. The newsletter proclaimed, "You need to vote for us, because if you don't, 80 million Muslim!" And I yell, "Muslim!" because it was capitalized and underlined 3 times. 80 million Muslim Turks will overrun England. I checked, you know, I did the research, and it turns out that the population of Turkey was 78 million. They believed the entire Turkish nation was going to empty, and they were all flying over to England. Even then, they are 2 million short, so I can only assume the BNP were counting pregnant women who on the flight over were gonna pop out reinforcements. Now, interestingly, 2 years ago, the BNP fell apart. The reason they fell apart was hilarious. They forgot to file the paperwork to renew their status as a party. They were defeated by admin. And you know what must drive them crazy? I bet they know if they had a few immigrants working in the office. And when they did try to reinstate themselves as a party with a late application, it was fraught with mistakes. A lot of spelling errors. One of their tenants was listed as fighting unsustainable housing. All I've got to say, if you can't speak the language properly, you shouldn't live here.
Why are you banging on about the BNP? As you said, they're gone. I mean, as racists go, they're so last year.
Well, there are still a lot of groups who look upon the immigrant hordes with hate. There's the National Front, Britain First, English Defence League. Last year, I was here in Manchester when there was a far-right demonstration. Was anyone else there? Yeah, yeah, you've seen them. Do you think they work? No? Do you think, in general, that protests work?
They picked on my ginger manager.
They picked on the ginger manager? They were against gingers? They must have been dyslexic. Also, who here has protested something? Oh, this lady over there has protested something. What did you protest?
Safer streets for women.
Save the streets for...
Safer
streets. Safer streets for women. Yes, that is slightly different from saving the streets from women. I was like, what are the women doing to the streets? Anybody else protest anything? Yes, this person over there, what did you protest?
in Malawi boarding school.
Oh, you protested boarding schools in Malawi?
Yeah, because they were giving a lot of, you know, beans with levels.
You're protesting the food?
Yeah.
Malawi's got problems, we've got problems. That's why I live here. But anyway, when there was the far-right protest in Manchester, it was in the center of Manchester, and I didn't know it was going on. I was in my flat, and I heard a lot of chanting and singing, and when I looked out of the window and saw a bunch of people with British flags and painted faces, I thought there must have been a football match. Also, it kind of looked like fun, so I thought, why don't I go join them? Downstairs, and immediately I stepped out of the door, I realized something odd. They seemed a little bit angry, and the signs were things like, no more Muslim mosques. And I was like, I don't know that football team. One thing I must commend the UK for, though, is you manage your racists well. Because there was a line of police on one end of the street, a line of police on the other end of the street, and they could just be racist in the middle. Everybody else in Manchester was like, don't bother us with your nonsense, just do it over there. It's so true. And I felt really safe, actually, because of the police, so I was taking selfies with them and I... But then I overheard that on the other side of the barrier, there was a counter-protest, which was the United Against Fascism people. And as much as I was having fun with the far right, I was like, oh, those are my people, so... So I just took one more selfie, said bye, and then I went to join the United Against Fascism protest. But then when I got to it, I realized it was just really, really boring. Honestly, it was just a lot of people making speeches about tolerance and equality. The far right was much more drama. They had face paint and chants. But jokes aside, I am serious. There's been a lot of trepidation about the rise of the right wing in Europe. Part of the appeal is because it's much more catchy. It's got costumes and songs and simple logic. You have problems? Why? It's them foreigners. Let's take back the country. Britain first. Bring back the good old days. The slogans are short, pithy, and they fit on a shirt. Tolerance and nuance and complexity are so much more cumbersome.
The economic effects of immigration are more complex, adaptive systems keep on evolving, mechanisation and corporate deregulation are more responsible for unemployment.
And that would be a very long slogan to have on a shirt. Tolerance just doesn't sound as catchy, unless I've got it. If we want the relationship between England and Africa to heal, we cannot let the groups who hate foreigners in our cultures control the narrative. Their messages are so simple and catchy, but ours can be too. Audience, you're gonna join in. We're gonna do it like it's a protest, okay? So when I say, what do we want? You say, nuance. What do we want?
Nuance.
What do we want?
Nuance.
Perfect. When do we want it? You will say, in a realistic and sensible timescale. Which gives both sides time to broaden their perspectives. Okay, here goes everybody. Let's do it. What do we want?
Nuance.
When do we want it? What do we want?
Nuance.
When do we want it? Thank you very much.
Citizen of Nowhere was written and performed by Deliso Chaponda, with James Quinn as the voice of the other guy. It was a BBC Studios production. It was produced in Manchester by Carl Cooper.
And next week, Deliso considers charities. If you'd like to